This is like one of, this is actually one of my favorite coaching clinics to do, a myth busting one, because I think it's quite a big one to bust. We are going to be talking about why you cannot spot reduce fat and then what the science says. And then another sort of myth busting slash educational topic is how your hormones in perimenopause and menopause genuinely affect belly fat. So it is real, but there's more to the story. And I think that's really important as women to know. And then the saying that abs are made in the kitchen, the truth that there is to that and why we say that and why it's become such a fitness cliche. And then just some practical strategies that you can do that actually do work, which is obviously based on the foundations and principles that we preach at Fit Mom. So to get going on the first one, busting the myth, you cannot spot reduce fat. So Marisa and Janet, how many times do you think we have got messages from people saying, please, can you add another whole core workout or three more core workouts to my program? Because I'm really struggling with this little tire on my tummy and it just won't go. And we are here to tell you that no matter how many sit-ups you do, no matter how many core exercises, sure, it's beneficial and going to strengthen your core. But unfortunately, those muscles will not be visible unless you burn the layer of fat on top. And the reason for this is because fat loss is systemic, which means that your body draws from stores across your whole body, not just the area that you are training. And I think it's also really important to acknowledge that we all have different body shapes. So we also all store fat in different areas. We all know that there's the pear shape, the apple shape. So if you, the first place that you usually gain weight is your tummy, it's probably going to be the last place that you lose it. And where you lose fat is largely, or gain and lose is largely dictated by your genetics. Hormones do play a role. And then if you're male or female. So, yeah, no matter how many crunches you do, you're just not going to see that six pack until you put yourself into a calorie deficit. And obviously, that's going to affect your energy balance, and then your body will respond by losing fat all over your body. And unfortunately, your tummy might be the last place to go based on your genes. It's quite a nice analogy to look at it like if you had to have a pool of water and drain the pool, you can't choose where the water is going to drain from. So it's quite nice to think of it like that. I don't know, Marisa or Janet, if you want to add to that.
I can, well, I think you and I actually have got quite different body shapes, and we both will in the like shorter side of like in terms of our lengths. I'm like 1.62, and I would be described as an apple shape. I've always struggled with more belly fat. But I can totally attest to being witness of when I've gone through traumatic times in my life and my stress was really high. It always, I know I've said this before, it always shows like 6 months later after a traumatic experience, and it directly is linked to belly fat, but also obviously food choices are different during that time. And for me, a big trigger is sugar. So stress and sugar. It just doesn't. I've got lots of friends, and I feel like actually one of them, like you can eat sugar and like you can be fine.
Really? You feel like I'm like that?
I feel like you can have sugar in your diet and you still have abs and you can go work out and you can use the fuel. And for me, it really is a downward spiral in terms of my body, and how I feel. I feel really gross like after sugar. One of my other
I
bit.
think I felt more gross after sugar because I can smash an entire packet of Chuckles and not feel anything. People are like, "Don't you feel sick?" I'm like, "No, not at all. Eat another
See,
bite."
I told you. See, we've had this discussion before. I've got very good friends who are exactly the same, and genetically flat stomachs, can eat Chuckles, can eat sugar, and they're completely fine.
Marisa, you can't complain because you've got very nice legs. So shush, you don't.
Can I spot reduce my calves? No, I do know that I'm more blessed in the leg department than the stomach department. So, yeah.
So that's why our photo shoots, we always show my abs and your legs. It's quite a similar analogy now that you bring up calves. Like when people try and train their calves, it's very genetic. Like you see men who've got these amazing calves and they haven't done any exercise since they played rugby when they were 15.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got me in the gym training my calves every week. If you should see I've got horrific calves. Like, I don't have calves. No. So it's a similar sort of concept. There's like only a point, unless I like actually started maybe, I don't know, kind of supplementing with some kind of calf steroid, I would never get there.
or surgery. That annoys me as well within the fitness and health industry. The people who've got the genetic like blessings of abs and they promote the stomach workouts or they promote their specific diet, but we know it's gene-based. And the same with, I've got guys in the fitness industry that have been on men's health covers and other young boys looking up to them thinking, not realizing it's genetics, but they promoting programs for the big like rugby ball calves basically. And it's, yeah, so tied to genes.
But it goes the other way where you're following the Pilates princess or the bar chick who weighs 40 kilograms and it's purely genetic. And then she's like, if you want to look like me, do my workout. And you're like, it's not going to happen. It's genetics plays a large role.
Yeah, that's why I think there's a coach for everyone and a training program for everyone. And not to diss any other sport or activity, find a movement that works for you. So if it is Pilates and yoga, I mean, we have discussed before that like there's a difference between strength training and Pilates. But at the same time, if it works for you and it works for your body, you're going to follow the go to the classes or the trainer who's got potentially a more similar body build to you and does the cycle syncing and it works for you. Like at the end of the day, just move and be healthier, whatever you choose.
Yeah. Janet, do you have anything to add? Have any of your one-on-one ladies been asking you for more core workouts?
Yes, everyone does ask for more core. And I think it's also, like you say, with where you build muscle, it's also where you can't choose where you're going to lose that fat. And unfortunately for most women, your boobs is one of the first thing that goes when you lose weight. So I think it's just having an understanding and an expectation as you go into it.
And also so much of the movements with strength training, which I love, involve the core anyway. So much involves you to stabilize and certain, like whatever, even a squat, if you've got a barbell on your back, you're using your core to stabilize. So rather pay more attention. If you're strength training with intention, following a program, rather pay more attention to what you're eating, your energy balance versus adding more core workouts. I mean, sure, you'll get a stronger core, but they're only going to be revealed by being in that calorie deficit. Right, moving on. Another thing that gets a bad rap is the hormonal shifts that take place in perimenopause and menopause that affect the belly fat. And the first thing to say about this is that they are real. It is real. And women are not experiencing increased belly fat in this transitional phase in life for nothing. But the whole story, hi, Amy, about this, yeah, there's just more to it. So firstly, if you think of estrogen as the hormone that has kept your fat storage in check, for most of your adult life, the estrogen has directed your fat towards your hips and your thighs, okay? So as women, generally, that's where most of the fat is stored. But then as your estrogen declines, which is during this phase of perimenopause and menopause, the directing signal seems to fade and the fat starts to going more towards your abdomen / belly, okay? So it's just that your body's storage pattern has like genuinely shifted. And then what happens, this is then coupled with your habits. So we know that during this time, women aren't sleeping as well. You can feel depressed, moody, lethargic. Your eating habits will probably go out the window. And then that fat, then you're probably going to be in a calorie surplus. So you're going to be eating more than you're burning. And that fat then is going to be directed more towards your belly than your hips and your thighs. And then that's why there's this, oh my God, I've got all this belly fat, boom, perimenopause. So it makes sense, but it doesn't mean that you are powerless, okay? So you're not imagining it, but you're not powerless. And there was a study done that found that women who maintained their activity levels through this menopause transition did not show the same abdominal fat increases as those who became more sedentary. And I'm not downplaying that it is much harder to be motivated during this phase. I think it really is, which is why I think it's important to seek help. Go and see your doctor. Go on the HRT if it aligns with what you want to do. But as soon as your habits slip, then you are going to see that increase in belly fat. So your hormones set the stage, but your habits still write the story. So that's my two cents on that. Marisa, Janet, want to add?
No, I think there's so much to learn in that department. Maybe Janet, you also, I don't know if you've got anything to add, but also I just find it really interesting with whatever phase we go through as women when it comes to hormones, there's so many similar symptoms, like whether it's like now, pregnancy, I keep saying to Rocco, and I had it with when I was pregnant with Alessio as well, is my mood is similar to how I was as a 16-year-old. I'm irritable. I like that phase of going through like, really a moody teenager, and it's just interesting how a lot of even the physical transformations and the changes and the all of it hormone wise whatever phase you're at in life, similar to perimenopause and menopause, it just is so similar. I just don't understand why only women have to go through this so regularly.
Like, not to be like martyrs, but like really it's very unfair. And then it's not only then you're going to breastfeed, and then, well, you have the baby, then you have that weak dip, what is it, 2 weeks after you've had the baby, and then you breastfeed, and then you have the withdrawals after you stop breastfeeding. I mean, it just never bloody ends.
Mm. No, and that's the thing with me, older mom, turning 39 in a month, that as soon as I'm over that postpartum, which we know that's a very long phase, it's not an 8 months, year, 2 year thing, it can carry on very long, especially with breastfeeding, etc. But then I'm going into the category of perimenopause, like just after. So it's wild.
You actually might hit breastfeeding and perimenopause at the same time.
It's quite common though. I've read articles where...
I think you must just fly here and live with me, Rocco won't go.
Exactly. But it is interesting that that's one of the beautiful things of having geriatric ovaries. But anyways.
What? That you'll go through it all at the same time?
Yeah, the one symptom can lead to the next because it's. I mean, when were you when you first had SAF? 28?
Yeah.
A whole 10 years younger than me. But I've got 10 years on you, independence, responsibility free.
Yeah, so I'm actually, I feel older because I've got a 13-year-old already. Okay, I think the abs in the kitchen thing is like, again, explained by the energy balance situation. But it is true, again, going back to the only way you're visibly going to see your abs is if you get rid of the layer of fat on top of them, which is determined by energy balance over time, and that you cannot exercise your way out of a calorie surplus. So if you're eating more than you burn, a 45-minute strength session will burn, say, 200 to 350 calories, but a single high-calorie meal can wipe out an entire day's deficit, as we know. So in order to reveal those abs, you need to be mindful, more mindful of what your intake than what you actually are thinking that you're burning during a training session. And then that's also why we push protein, because it is like the super macronutrient in terms of it increases your satiety, so you'll feel fuller for longer. Obviously, it's going to preserve the muscle, it's going to help with recovery, and it also has the highest thermic effect of food. So 20 to 30% of its calories, protein, are burned during digestion. So that's also why it's an important one that we focus on. And even if you're just hitting 100 grams of protein a day, that's a really good level of protein in terms of helping you maintain that calorie deficit and helping you feel fuller for longer. And yeah, so I think also just with the overall calorie deficit, your goal should always be addition, not subtraction. So not, oh no, I can't have this, I can't have that. It's what can you add? Can I add more fiber? Can I add more fruit and veggies? Where can I get more leaner sources of protein? And I always just think that is should be the mindset and how you should frame it. Anything, two cents, anyone? Just the practical strategies, which I said in the beginning of how to tackle this, is what we preach generally in terms of the FitMom philosophy. So calorie deficit is king, protein is queen. With your protein, aiming for 1.6 to 2 grams of protein per kg of body weight. But that said, a solid number to just aim for is 100 grams of protein. I really think 100 grams of protein, in up to 140 grams, if you're able to do that. But 100 grams is achievable, doable for most people. Strength training, I would say a minimum of 3 times a week. But if you're a big runner and you're only getting 2 solid sessions in a week, great. As long as you're training with intention and following a program. Your daily steps, as we know, your NEAT. So your NEAT is one of the highest things that you can leverage for fat loss. So it's a tool you can whip out. So even if you're only hitting on average 8,000 steps, if you really are like, shit, I want to shake these last 3 kgs, try and average 10,000 steps and see what happens. It's a really great tool to use, which most women don't give enough value to. Sleep, girls, 7 to 9 hours, non-negotiable, because this also helps with your appetite regulation and your recovery. And that's key. We all know that when we are sleep deprived, the first thing I want if I'm sleep deprived is carbs and sugar. So if you can get enough sleep regularly, it really will help you maintain that calorie deficit if weight loss is your goal. And then being consistent versus trying to be perfect. There's no such thing at FitMom as being perfect. So cut with trying to be perfect, just try to be consistent. And just in terms of where we're at with strong season now, so weeks 1 to 4, there may be some visual change, but then from weeks 8 to 12, and I know this is only an 8-week program, but then we're going to move on hopefully to our next, you will move on to our next training block. Weeks 8 to 12 is where the shift becomes visible, really visible. So this is not a quick fix. It's long game. And then just in terms of your belly fat, don't chase your belly. Train your whole body, feel it well, move daily. The belly will follow.
Just cool. One thing to add, Ash, just one of those questions just quickly on the efficiency for a lot of the ladies. They can't go from 30 minutes to 45 minutes or 60 minute workouts. So often their advice is just to reduce the sets. And then what is the efficiency like if you are reducing those sets? Are you still going to be able to get results?
So the short answer, yes. So it still counts. That extra set still counts. Doing a set later is far better than obviously just skipping it. There is some evidence to suggest that completing the set in one go is going to add more to the muscle fatigue in that session, which is going to give you a small advantage for muscle protein synthesis. But again, we're not trying to be perfect. We're not bodybuilders. We're not prepping to be on stage in our bikinis. It's marginal. Total volume and consistency over time is what counts. So if you can get that extra set in and it's 6 hours later, do it. Absolutely do it. I think it's amazing. And I think it's Kathy asked that question. Like, I want to praise her for bloody well still getting it done, because once I've showered and I'm out of my workout gear, there's no way I'm going to be doing that Bulgarian split squat in the kitchen. So well done to her. And I think it's actually a smart adaptation strategy. Versus not doing it at all.
Yeah, but then also we just have to remember that, like one of those, someone actually shared it the other day, is just saying like we're so fixated on like, oh, I should now not have the oat milk or the almond milk because of seed oils, but then drink alcohol and booze over the weekend. So we get so fixated on a new trend and what people are saying not to do. And when it comes to strength training and getting results, we've had clients that have incredible results with 3 strength training workouts a week. Just 3. Like if we look at Amanda, lawyer, started doing strength training, super consistent with just being balanced in her meals, 3 strength training sessions a week, completely transformed her body, lost up to 8 kgs, and she's a new person, has a like completely new lifestyle.
I think 3 is, I actually think 3 is a sweet spot. I really do. And like, unless, as I said, you're a runner and you're training for a marathon and you need to be running more and that's just a season of your life, I think 3 is the sweet spot, because I think you can target all muscle groups in those 3 sessions. I think 45 minutes is perfect, which is not a lot of time. I've actually recently dropped my training sessions to 3, and I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. I'm running a bit more, maybe playing a bit of paddle.
But that's the thing. That's the thing also. You're adding other activities on other days. But again, three can work. It's a big a focus where people are still struggling is the nutrition. So, I mean, there's so many factors to take into account when you are on this health journey. But I think we fixate too often on like things that won't impact our long-term journey. Like you say, it's at the end of the day just about sustainability and what's but consistent.
Also, I think if you like you're saying, like the lawyer, so busy, like if you can get three sessions in and hit 8,000 to 10,000 steps a day, you will see results if you are controlling what you're putting in your mouth.
Yeah, totally agreed.
Cool,
awesome. Hey, thank you, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Chats.
Nice to see you. Okay,
chat soon. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Have a good weekend, guys. Bye.